Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
This is while walking for my sister, who has sent me an article about Einstein's problems with quantum mechanics called Spooky Action at a Distance. This is the concept that I could do one act and have spontaneous action happening at a distance, and that action at a distance would be happening faster than the speed of light. Now, before we go too far, this is the central concept of action at a distance, was the central concept of Newton, and Einstein overturned it with his special relativity, where he said things have to travel at the speed of light, and he had a thing of causality. There can only be one cause, you can't have... and the cause can only travel at the speed of light. And so he had this central idea that of space-time and the removal of this action at a distance, or spookiness. And this spookiness actually goes back away to St. Thomas Aquinas, into Summa Theologica, and came up with several concepts. One was action at a distance. Spooky action at a distance is actually the idea of St. Thomas Aquinas, and he called it angel time. That is, that angels or supernatural beings can not be in two places at once, but can actually get from one place to the other in no time whatsoever. And this idea was really fundamental in thinking, physics thinking, really up until Einstein. And it had massive flaws in it. And essentially, the science that we learn was not analytical, it was descriptive. And Newton's thing was saying that, look, I cannot explain how this action at a distance works, but it does, and my answer is that God does it. And Newton, Sir Isaac Newton, back in 1660 up to the sort of early years of the 17th century, the 1700s, 16th, more, that would be 18th century, I suppose. He said, look, this is just, a lot of people said, you've explained everything. He said, look, I haven't. I feign no hypothesis. I don't go in the process of, and what I'm teaching you is non-scientific, if you can possibly believe that. Einstein correctly said that you can't have action at a distance. And people have built these experiments called quantum entanglement, where you can actually clone a particle. And if the clone is a particle and you preserve it, you can possibly measure its, take measurements on it, and the laws of quantum mechanics will deny you information, and therefore you can work out what someone is doing by your inability to measure something. So this is a bit of a concept that Einstein worked through. And to be fair, Einstein was duped and tricked by various people. So this is actually the actual truth of the matter. He was tricked, and one of the key experiments in this process, I've built a little tabletop version of it in a little cube to bring into the physics labs, into teaching. So that's in the wings. So I know a lot about it. But the fundamental idea, the idea of the article that you sent to me, is this ability to make an exact clone of a particle and to two different places, and the two particles have to obey the laws of quantum mechanics, and therefore I can actually do something. I can poke one particle. This is actually true, but not in a space that you can really understand it. This is really sort of close way of explaining that typically people say position and momentum and things like that of a particle, but for a particle, perhaps it's better to describe the properties of a particle being mapped on the surface of a sphere, and the surface of the sphere being mapped onto the surface of the Earth. So I can actually do a GPS measurement. A quantum mechanical GPS measurement works for longitude or latitude, but not for both. So now what happens is that if I decide to do latitude measurements on a particle afterwards, it means that I won't be able to get meaningful information out on longitude measurements on the particle. The same, well, it is exactly, effectively, the same particle. And this is one of the curious things of quantum mechanics, is that the particles are not numerically countably different. Now, we have to really get into that, trying to explain that. So, in essence, when I clone a particle, it is the same particle. Now, this is a bit of a head scratcher, and because it's the same particle, but I'm holding the same particle in different locations. There's this sort of window into looking at it, and indeed the explanations and thoughts to do with that are profound, but sort of very different. They're profound, yet people have not really found easy ways of describing things. So let's get back into it. So we have Einstein. People knew action at a distance couldn't work, and the people who really thought about it said, "Look, this is impossible. There is nothing. The moon is not going around the Earth due to a gravitational wave. You know, gravitational energy pulling it in like a rope. There's not that sort of thing. If the moon suddenly disappeared, if the Earth suddenly disappeared, the moon would fly off to space. But that process would have to that process would take the speed of light to go. So what would happen is that the Earth, when the moon, looking at the Earth, and the Earth suddenly got destroyed by the Vogons, you know, cleared away, the moon would then fly off to space. But as far as the moon is concerned, is it would happen as they were seeing that the Earth being destroyed. So what happens is that the gravity and everything goes through space. It's not instantaneous. There's not an instantaneous power. The process of a transmission of forces, everything has to go at the speed of light. Now, let's go back to this way that our advanced technology can actually make a particle and clone it such that it is the same particle. Now, why do I say it is the same particle? Well, say if I have two apples, I've got an apple, and I clone it, and I give it to you, and there is no way in quantum particles that I can actually put a mark on that apple to make it indistinguishable. Now, in a complex system, putting a mark on it would destroy its wave function, it would make it different, they would be different. Or in the case of an electron, or something small, it is so small, it has no substructure to it. So if I've got an electron there, one of the things I have to tell you is that if you are thinking of an electron as something small, like a little pore on your skin, or, you know, a little grain of dirt you could see under a microscope, it's not like that. In fact, electrons can be actually quite big and quite visible, and they're these beautiful, soft, fluffy things, and importantly, they have no surface. That is, their existence, they ease in and to existence, and have a maximum of existence and ease out. And they can actually be quite large and complex. And being large and complex is essentially what we do, as we are basically electron or chemical machines. And a lot of what we is done is that these electrons have these things of being quite big. Now, this is not taught at school. People are religiously taught something else. And dare I say, it is a religion. And it's not surprising that any religious thought structure has a... someone's looking at me and let's close the door. It's not surprising that something funny is taught, and it's taught in a social folk mechanism. A folk mechanism in that you're given the information along with the information that a lot of other people believe it, and the information that if you don't believe it, you're going to have a dreadful life. This is going to be bad. This is like any sort of folk prejudice or belief. There's a couple of serious sort of giveaways that people spend time giving you the history and spend a lot of time investing in teaching it to you, going through ceremonies. But at the end of it, like leprechauns and fairies and angels and things like that, there's no physical evidence for it. Although, you know, people all know about it due to the mechanism coming in here. So what you have been taught previously is the folk electron. But the real electron is large. It doesn't have any colour, but it does respond to light. That is that rather than being a particular colour, an electron can hold an oscillation of space and then push that oscillation out in space out again, and that oscillation in space is what is what we see as light. So everything you see is electrons, and everything you see is that stuff, that electron emitting light. So that's pretty amazing. But those electrons are not of a world that you can comprehend. So you're very much used to buying things with money, objects with money, and counting them. And, you know, you've got so many eggs there, 12 eggs, they're all separate eggs, and you can put a mark on each of them. Now, what actually happens is that if you can imagine an egg has a spec sheet for it, specification sheet, and it will specify that it's egg shape, a shell, and a mass, and a liquid, and a temperature, and stuff like that. Now, what happens is, as you get smaller and smaller, various lines get removed from that spec sheet. And when you get as small as possible, you're only left with a couple of things. So, left with a a magnetic field, but with no moving parts. So there's no method of generating a magnetic field. You've got a angular momentum. This is a spinning like a top, but there's nothing, no physical part in there to spin. And when you really get into it, an electron actually no longer obeys the laws which I can derive from direct observation or analogy, because we have no analogy of something which has the rotational symmetry of an electron. So an electron has a rotational symmetry of 720 degrees rather than 360 degrees. So unlike a physical object which I can rotate once, I have to rotate electron twice. And it's also got the property of spin and stuff like that. But importantly, it's big, but it has no part on it. So it doesn't have a part. It's big, but it's not made of other smaller stuff. So I can't get a piece of liquid paper and put a mark on it and watch that mark rotate. Say if I had a tyre in a car and a policeman came around and put a little chalk mark on it, I could then see how fast my cars were rotating by looking at the speed of that mark. There's nothing on the electron to do like that, and there's no way I can label an electron. And indeed, the fact that you cannot distinguish electrons is a very powerful thing, because that fact you can't distinguish things means that they have to be distinguished by inside an atom. They have to be distinguished by how they're folded. And it's sort of like having a drawer. Say if I have a drawer. Now, I suppose the thing inside that drawer is a drawer. So if you can imagine a drawer being a space which electrons can go in. And say the drawer is a pillow-sized drawer, and I have a pillow. I have a stack of 20 pillows, and I have to fit it in the drawer. Now, what that means is that I put the first pillow in the drawer. The drawer is full. However, what I can do for the second pillow is give it a twist and actually push it through the first pillow. And lo, I can actually fit those 20 electrons or 20 pillows in a drawer fit for one pillow. By actually fitting them in that way. And there comes a limit to the number of pillows I can put in, and that's by the sort of the energy, the pressure that the drawer has. So it's not a space thing that limits it. It's the it's a sort of twist energy which limits the amount of electrons which I can fit into an atom. But that being said, is that an atom has a small size, much smaller than one would expect, but it's got a physical size, and it's actually the physical size that I can fit things into. So I'm just having a walk here, and perhaps you can hear the trains coming through, perhaps you can't. I've got a directional microphone now, a shotgun microphone, so hopefully you're not hearing the noise of these things going. So hopefully you heard that. I turned the directional microphone at the train to go across. So look, we have this thing that space is not we get a contradiction in sort of our world of thinking is of folklore. And we are taught to believe things, because if we believe, we confirm, and people who don't believe get punished. And so when we come up against something which obviously tells us that the folk belief can't work, it can't go any further, our response is not that we have to abandon our folk belief, but there is someone who's going to be punished, someone who's going to be very sorry that this is wrong. And now we come to this idea of these electrons, which don't have they're so small, or they've got no ability or part in them that a mark can be put on them, we can't distinguish them, yet we can actually do this GPS style of measurement on them. And I suppose another thing to do is that the electron and the actual size of things is to do with the pixel size of space itself. That's probably another concept to go in. Now, I do understand this fairly deeply. And as you know, sort of certain aspects of the memory have gone. But the more I find is that people describe things and I research it and I find out, they haven't got the correct explanation themselves. It's not that I don't understand, it's there. So I've just come up with a little episode going through that. That area. So let's go back to this entire thing. I've just got to go through it. So what we have here is people. There are certain things that people say take as truth, but it's only truth because they haven't actually started at the basic axioms and actually believed it. They've taken a shortcut, and they've taken the shortcut as a guarantee that they'll have it there, and they have also taken it with them. So fairly aggressive behaviours. So if I can put it as a bit of an aside, now I'm speaking a bit longer here because I've got this walk in the National Park and I have to actually talk about it. But if you can imagine belief systems, people taking on belief systems, very much as if the way people take a Macintosh computer. They don't really understand how a Macintosh computer works, but they do know the brand name, and they draw a series of conclusions about how a computer works from the icon and the marketing and the user community, and that's perfectly reasonable because it takes a fair amount of investment to understand what's going on, and overall there's other things for us to do, like live with other skills to do, to go across it. So that's a fair enough thing to do. However, nature itself has not got a brand name for it. Nature itself is really just only itself. It's only really nature. It's not a bore or any particular group. It's actually what it is. And one has to understand that the method of thinking, the sort of controversy, comes from people who have missed steps in the understanding, and they've missed steps because they've taken a route which misses steps. And so one of the missing steps is if you come in to this thing with the Newtonian or classical mechanics, the sort of not scratch mechanics, and they say, well, look, here's three sections of an argument, and I'm going to use my logic for A and C. And look, if I put in B at a quantum level, I get a stupid answer. And moreover, people have this thing called the wave particle duality, because they measure a quantum system with, and they don't worry about it. They measure it with a classical particle detector, a sort of a notional one rather than a quantum mechanical detector, and they get this contradiction. And what they do is that they have to go back in and adjust their folklore, and they produce a folklore concept of wave particle duality. This is pretty much like the Trinity in Earth, Father, the Earth, sorry, not Earth, the Son, the Father, and the Holy Spirit. This thing is, it's a mystery. And unfortunately, science really has things that you can't comprehend. You have the square root of minus one, you have S2, 7, 20 degrees symmetry. That's something you can't understand. But something you can't understand because of the maths is outside your the maths that we have does not itself make itself a mystery. To go on it. So just come back to our situation. So I want you to, I suppose, some of the things we have to start off and tell you. One is that space is not empty. Space is full of physical properties. So if I have a void of nothing in outer space, that's a void, that's different from a void of real nothing that I can imagine. So there's like two different nothings. There's real nothing and virtual nothing. That is, nothing which I can simulate. Now, real nothing carries light and carries fields, or fields carries distortions of, can be distorted. And, you know, so real nothing, I can shine light in real nothing, and that real nothing will respond and take the energy from one end of the box to the other end of the box, and the energy will be stored in that nothing. So when I fire a laser beam, the laser beam consists basically of excited space. You know, that's one aspect to try and get. So that space can expand, and it gives us a universe. Now that space is also has a fundamental pixel size. If you get a magnifying glass and look at a photograph, you'll see, eventually we'll see little dots. And there's sort of a feeling that, oh, well, if I look at those dots, they'll just be one uniform colour. Ha ha ha. But no, if you actually magnify those dots even more, they will eventually break up to dots in itself. There's a fundamental pixel size for space, and there's a fundamental occupational of that pixel size, which is, I suppose, essentially the size of an atom. The fundamental is limited by that, and the actual particles of an atom are so small that they themselves have no further parts on them. So that we are actually basically printed into space. I think that's an important concept to go in, that everything is quantum mechanical. A lot of the concepts which people talk to you, they really don't understand what they're talking about, and they really are such that they will not tell you they don't know. They will tell you that it's not that they don't know, it is a mystery. But they won't actually go back and say, well, there's its flaws in my argument. I'm making a few assumptions that folk knowledge is correct here, and therefore I get a folk result. And when I say folk, sort of like fairies in the bottom of the garden, you can explain, I suppose, you know, lollies missing by fairies coming in, not your adult parents coming out at night and nicking off your lollies while you're asleep. You produce something. So this is one of the things that folk beliefs produce, folk explanation. And so spooky at a distance is, poor old Einstein, he's a great person, but he didn't have quantum mechanics, and therefore people tend to go into it. Now, we have this thing, and I know our dad worked on something called pseudo-random numbers, and how you can actually encode any sort of random number sequences information. So essentially, if I measure my two electrons, now my two electrons are now absolutely clinically identical, and they are in a space simulation of called our universe, and our universes have a fundamental pixel size, and if I make one pixel, duplicate it and move it across and measure it, I can't break the laws of physics, I will measure random stuff out of it. And what I choose to measure, if I measure longitude, I mean it will stuff up the longitude measurement at the other end. But it's not that simple. The thing is that I have to, if I measure something and I set it up so it's something, I have to randomize it. I have to measure a random state. So look, it's like I'm measuring the head-tail ratio. Well, I have to flick the coin. Okay, so part of the process is that I flick the coin, right? I flick the coin and then I double it, and then I move the two things to separate points of space. So now people don't say that because their major interest is teaching you folk belief and getting your fascination up with it. So let's go in quantum entanglement. I flick the coin and then I double it, and then I take the two identical coins which are rotating in exactly the same way, they're flipping in space in the same way, and then I slap it leftways, you know, horizontally or vertically, and as I slap it horizontally, vertically, I lose my ability to measure it in the other way. Now, bottom line is that, that's what it is. So, let's put it in terms of quantum entanglement and quantum communication. I have to generate something which is uncertain. So, there's no quantum entanglement experiment which is worth worrying about which doesn't do this process. So what in fact happens is that I produce a laser pulse. I produce it so short that it doesn't get time to define a particular polarization. So if you've got your polar sunglasses, you know that you can rotate the polarization one way or the other, but if I can make it so short, I can effectively do that flick of the coin. And then I can put it through a nonlinear crystal. And if I put it through a nonlinear crystal, I can produce two of them. And you can imagine, when I produce two of them, it's really like I put in a $2 coin and I can produce two $1 coins out, spinning the same way. Okay, so you can double something by putting in the energy or making sure the energy is the same or the economics is the same. And now that's, I suppose you could call it, put in a doubling crystal, or you could put the double light, so a double crystal in reverse. So normally you can put some infrared and get out some blue. So what you do is you make some blue, flip it, make it by making it so short and putting it into a crystal and reversing any two infrared photons out. There's no point putting infrared in, two infrared in and getting one light out. That's of no interest. And so it's doing the opposite process there. So it goes through and you get these two photons going out, and you put it through a beam splitter, and due to the pixelation of our space, the two photons which are produced at the same time in exactly the same way, because they have to, if you imagine time reverse, go back into the crystal and produce the visible light. Now, just to tell you about nonlinear crystals, a not only a thing, I probably think of your bank balance. If you had a bank balance which had a little bonus in there, which was the square of your balance. So if I had the balance plus a hundredth of the balance squared, if I put in a dollar, I'd have a dollar 1 cent. But if I put in $10, I don't know, I'd have the square of that, which is a bit more. And so it means that by doing all the accounting adding up, I get a different... The accounting's completely muddled. And, of course, that doesn't get muddled, and it actually produces these things. That's my best explanation I can give to a sister on it. Okay, so it's gone through here. Now, dare I say, why... I have to stop at this point in time. I'm about to go down to the gorge, and I'm absolutely exhausted, but it's just a part of... it's something I do every day to really push myself. I hope it's okay. Now, what am I talking about? I'm flipping my coin. I'm doubling it or converting. I'm playing my bit of two up, but I have two up with one coin, and the coin... goes through a process which produces a $2 and two $1. The two $1 go out, and I measure how they're rotating in, over the top or left to right. I can do it. Now, the bottom line is that if I measure one, I can't tell, I shouldn't be able to tell that I am in a quantum... in an experiment. If I'm just see a coin flipping, I will measure it. And the laws of... and it is random. Heads or tails. It'll be heads or tails one way or the other. And this is where the actual... when you go through the detail, you're saying, oh, right. Now, I want to stop here and say, why do people... not tell you how these experiments are done? Why do people not tell you things? Because they've got a much better, comforting story, and the story of our sort of conformal existence. The basic story that we want to get through to most people is, this is, out of human history, is that if you don't conform, you will suffer. So, I have a story which everyone believes in, so you listen to it, and if you don't understand it, don't. It's sort of king without its clothes, that type of stuff. And so, because you've got such a short circuit, a cultural short circuit, it is a cultural short circuit to say, look, it's a spooky accident as a distance in classical physics. Everyone believes it and stuff like that. But it falls completely apart. Doesn't build a computer, doesn't build a drug, doesn't do anything. It's just this, real disturbed stuff. So we've got quantum physics. Going into it. So this is why I'm telling you this story, and I think it's really an act of. So if you're not if you're the person left out of the group off to the side, well, they're not entertaining you. They're ignoring you. They're putting you off, putting you in a room. So you pick up books and you start to read it, and you figure it out, and you go into the party and say, "Oh, do you know?" They say, "Shut up, get out." Yeah, like this. So let's go back to it. Now. The thing is that if I measure coin flicks, I'll get random numbers, and I won't be able to tell. So I can choose to measure one or the other, and at the two locations, and from that I can send a message. The only way I can send a message to another person is by theoretically measuring the dee da da da. So the dee da for the Morse code. I can send a Morse code across the universe, theoretically, at high speed. For a dee, I measure the vertical spin, and for the da, I measure the horizontal spin. So I have a message, and I can send that across. Now, because it's random numbers, I've got to, and I need enough to actually see what's going on, I've got to send it for a few bits to go across, because it's random. I've got to pick that, you know, it's no longer random, sticking its head up, and then I send it across the universe. Now, someone at the other side will be trying to run experiments, and they'll get these results. Now, the only way that they can tell whether these results are conform to randomness or not randomness, if they have a copy of my own results. And the only way they can get a copy of my own results is actually sending my own results across to them conventionally. So I could just as well, rather than send my results, send the original message. It would reach there just as fast. And so this is this bizarre thing, that there is actually no get out of jail terms, because I have to, at the end of the day, send my results across. Now, what happens is that I can encode my pseudo and random number system, so I can get a random number sequence, then from that random number sequence reverse engineer a key and send the key across. And so I could theoretically compress the data. However, due to the nature of statistics, that compression, I don't think will actually, you can't actually send information, you can't compress information and send it across. So the spooky thing is that I can send the message across, but I suppose at the end of the day, the entire conceptual framework you go into is that I'm living in a quantum universe with quantum pixels, and my general existence is not of particles, it's all quantum. So by the time you get to do the explanation and work out what's going on, you've crossed over the quantum threshold. And for Einstein, he basically didn't accept the idea of the quantum fuzziness. He couldn't accept that there is a particle which has got physical sizes, but it just exists. It doesn't have a left and a right for it to, that you could send a light beam between the two points. So you can make a physical electron that's quite big if you wanted to do it, such that light could travel from side to side, but there is no side for it to travel between, because it is occupying the full pixel of our pixelated universe. So there is more phenomena in there to really work out what's going on. So at the end of the day, people cannot use quantum entanglement to communicate faster than the speed of light. However, there is this profoundity, which you get, and fear that you get, that the folklore that I've been taught is not sufficient. The folklore means I'm going to get in trouble. A lot of people are going to get in trouble, but that's what people, you know, thinking about folklore thinks about. You think about who believes it, who said it, and the implication of it. And it's sort of like, I believe in fairies and ghosts and stuff like that because my grandma told me and stuff like that. Or I believe in such and such in the spring festival because I did it as a kid and I'm conditioned to believe it. So a lot of education, a lot of cultural education has come through not enlightenment. Okay, this is the entire, you know, big thing about the Enlightenment. A lot of this has come through physical enlightenment. It's come through, I can't believe, I thought I was going much further. I've got this huge section of the gorge to go down to, so I'm just only halfway down the gorge and I'm exhausted going down. So I hope I can actually just muster the energy to go up. So hopefully I'll be able to finish this at this point in time. So that's a key thing. I think you might be able to get a comprehension for how this all hangs together, and I think you'll be able to see that there is a lot of beliefs, a lot of careers, a lot of lifespans, a lot of structures held in by people at certain point, even quite nice people, turn, you know, they get frightened. I think we have to actually say that a lot of the existing belief is held in place by fear and the idea that you have your place in society a little bit by who you look up to, but also by who you look down to. And what you don't know, you sort of, you know, no one around you knows, so you pick up, it's okay not to know. But let's try and get into it. The entire spooky action at a distance, yes, it does happen, because we are in this sort of, we are actually not real. We are in a big picture, pixelated picture, and we are sort of limited by the, you know, look, the Planck's constant tells us is a limit on the pixel size and the amount of information that we can go across. And so two things can occur, two separate things of the universe, and they are related by an event which happened in the distant past, as is everything, right? You don't have to have next quantum entanglement for this to happen, that thing happens at the maximum speed is the speed of light, which is the actual fabric of space, which is stretching. However, I can't get information from one part of the universe to the other faster than the speed of light. And it's one of these things that you think, oh, gee whiz, this would mean that if I had classical physics. Yes, it does, and it does tell you that classical physics doesn't have the full story. So by measuring my coin flips, I get some random information, but I need to communicate. I can only pull out the message encoded in my selection by looking at my results that are sent across to me at the speed of light. So I don't know, it's rather an interesting thing. We can have, I think in quantum mechanics, if information is coming to you through two routes, I can see if one has had measurements in it. I can see my inability to reconstruct it there, so I can see whether from looking at the information that there is a message there, and there is a sort of a limitation that only one person can read the message. So that's quantum cryptography, and that is legitimate, but it's really saying nothing more than the nature of space or anything else like that. But you can't actually get spooky action at a distance, because it's not spooky action at a distance. The actual particles themselves are spooky. They, it's, you know how I could, I don't know, hit the jelly at one point and the wave travels through it. Electrons aren't like that because they don't have parts on them. You can't get them to vibrate or something, or things like that. And electrons themselves, look, you don't have to worry about spooky at a distance. They are spooky themselves. They are ghost-like. Do you know how a ghost, you could put your hand right through it? Well, an electron is exactly a ghost particle. It has no surface. You can put your hand right through it. In fact, if you've got one electron, you can just twist the electron and put the other electron through it. And indeed, that's what an atom is. It's a whole series of electrons twisted and put through each other in space. And there are particles like neutrinos and neutrons, which are ghost particles. They are the ghosts among us. So I think the message for this is that, the spookier distant stuff, that's folks, that's ghost stories. However, we are actually an ensemble of ghosts. It's sort of just, I don't believe in ghost stories and stuff like that. But you should actually believe in it. And the idea that these particles, who we are made up of an uncountable number of ghosts, all mystically going through each other and all held together by the spirituality of the neutron. Now, I suppose I'll finish off by saying that, needless to say, the image of the atom, of these tiny electrons going in the ellipses around a grape, is sort of, by the same person, bore wrong on so many ways and proven completely wrong and held by conspiracy. I definitely do say a conspiracy to do it, and taught in schools. And what can you say that when you want to communicate and put more to people, you hit a wall. So, as a brother responding to your email, I've given you this podcast. So I hope you enjoy it as a little gift. And for me, it's one of the standard stuff you have to do as you're going through recovery. See you later.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.